All right. Parsha Ki Tetzeh comes after Ve'et Hanan and Re'eh and Shoftim. Now, from Ve'et Hanan through Re'eh, Ve'et Hanan, Ekev Re'eh, we have general Musar from Moshe Rabbeinu. And then in Parshat Shoftim, we had general mitzvot. And now, Parshat Ki Tetzeh, we have lots and lots of specific mitzvot. It is the Parsha with the most mitzvot in it. 74 mitzvot are in one Parsha. More than 10%, far more than 10% of all the mitzvot in the Torah found in one Parsha, Parsha Ki Tetzeh. The first Pasuk, Ki Tetzeh L'Milchama, the Baal HaTorah tells us, like strategy, Ki Tetzeh L'Milchama, if you have a Milchama, you should go and fight on enemy territory. Don't let them fight on your home turf. All right? You have civilian casualties. Take the battle to the enemy, which is certainly what we did in the beginning of the Six-Day War. We went and took out almost the entire Egyptian Air Force before they got off the ground. So we took the battle to them. The first mitzvah that you have in the parasha we alluded to in previous weeks, and that is Eish Yifat Tohar. Eish Yifat Tohar is, you're in the midst of battle, and you see this beautiful non-Jewish woman, and you have a desire to sleep with her. So there is a machlokas, how to understand what's the next step. Some are of the opinion that you can sleep with her already right then and there. You see her, you desire, you can sleep with her. Another opinion is that you need to first go through this whole procedure before you can sleep with her. Now, what is the procedure? You bring her home and you give her a month to mourn her family and cry. She shaves her head. She grows out her nails. She changes her clothes. She puts on, less attractive clothes. If after a month he decides he doesn't want to marry her, so we say, great, he lets her go. He cannot keep her as a maidservant. He cannot sell her, even though she was a captive of war. He doesn't want to marry her. That's it. You're a free agent. Go wherever you want. If, on the other hand, he wants to marry her, so then he's allowed to. The idea is, Gemara says, Dibra Torah Kaloshim B'nei Adam. The Torah is looking at the man and understanding psychologically where he is. He has a desire for her. He's been away from his wife or his girlfriend or just any Jews for a long time. He's been fighting. He sees a woman. He has a desire. And the Torah now gives him a way out. And the hope is, according to Rashi, that after this procedure, he will not want to be with her. She'll be less appealing. It won't be like that moment he saw her. Now she's already, he's had her there. She's been in the house for a month crying, shaving her head. And the hope is that he'll say, you know what? I don't need to marry this woman. This is Rashi's view. The Chizkuni, on the other hand, says, no, the process is to change her status. Similar to what the procedure was with Shevet Levi. Shevet Levi, we shaved their hair. Right? We also went something before they took office, and we're breaking from the past. And the Aruch Chaim has a more mystical view. The Aruch Chaim says that at Har Sinai, okay, we know the Midrash says God went around to the nations, and he asked them if they wanted Torah, and we know the nations asked what's in it, and then they got rejected, and when they said, we don't want it. But there were souls in every nation that actually will say, I vote yes. So, some of those people, says the Aruch Chaim, they convert. They're strong enough to, go against everything that they know, their entire culture, their family, and they convert. Others are not as strong. And, says the Aruch Chaim, they need a Jewish soldier to see the spark in their soul and bring her back. According to the Aruch Chaim, when the Jewish soldier sees her, the way we view it, not because he has a sexual desire, no. He sees something holy, it's Kirov, she really wants to be Jewish, and therefore, according to him, we're actually rooting for the man to marry her, because then she'll be a Jew. If, on the other hand, the way Rashi views it, that we're hoping that he finds her repulsive and lets her go, it'd be, whoa, what a missed opportunity, right? Because she had this spark to become a Jew. These are very different ways of viewing things. Yes, Ariel.
I feel like practically, if this would ever happen, everyone around the guy would be like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
They would
it's not as if people are going to throw a kiddush and say, oh, my son got engaged. who's the girl? Oh, you see the Oriental, you know, like, oh, it's like, no, it's not like, she doesn't look Jewish. Yeah, she's not. But like, so he met her somewhere. Oh, doesn't matter, right? So they're not throwing a Kiddush. I take it back, the Oriental. I'm sure there are lots of Oriental Jews. It was a bad line. But anyway, that non-Jewish looking woman. Okay, yes. Go on.
Just like practically, I don't think like, is it like designed to like never actually happen? Like you keep there for 30 days, people walk by your house, it's like, who is this person? Oh yeah, I want to marry her.
Yeah, I don't know if like, especially if you're a single guy, where is she living in your house for 30 days? I would assume not. That's yichud. I don't know where she is. We're putting her somewhere for her to mourn and shave her head and then 30 days later. What?
If you have a boyfriend, it's like,
at the what?
You have a wife already.
If you have a wife already, that would also make it awkward.
She
yeah.
Doesn't want to shave her head.
That's what she does. Is what she does. Now there is an opinion, I don't remember now who, that says this is in order to give her a chance to mourn. She now might. We could even take a married woman. Her husband might have died in battle, and now we're taking her and we're marrying her. So we're giving her a chance to get over her past, and then move on. Now, obviously, according to Rashi, we're not rooting for this to happen. We're hoping the guy finally, you know, gets a hold of himself. So what was I thinking? You know, and he wakes up one morning and says, please, just go home. But, according to the Rechaim, we're hoping that this works out because there's a Jewish soul, you know, just waiting to be released. And according to Chizkuni, it's somewhere in the middle. It's a status change, and this is what she needs to do.
She doesn't want to.
Doesn't sound like she has a lot of choice.
So how is that different than kidnapping?
I don't know. But you're, according to Torah, this is what's allowed to this person. I agree with you. To us, it sounds immoral.
Does the Jews have to do that?
No. You're not. No, absolutely not.
Oh, I was
No. It's not. No, not allowed. No. Just there's permission. Permission is given. That's why we've mentioned in the past, according to the Abarbanel, in the previous parsha, when the king, when Amishar wants a king, it's similar to this. Just like wanting to take an Eshet Yifat Torah is a terrible thing. So the Abarbanel, wanting to have a king is a terrible thing. Okay, but if you do it, if you want to do it, here are the laws. So too with this. If you want to do it, here are the laws. Yeah.
You should have said that during the, I don't know which modern Israeli war, the soldiers didn't rape the
and the United Nations condemned them. They're a bunch of racists. Okay. I don't know, I've heard that. That's what I've heard.
Wait, what?
That since the Israeli soldiers don't rape enemy combatants,
really?
So it's like racism because every soldier does such a thing. Okay, I don't know. I hope that's not true, but that's what I heard. I don't know. I heard that. Okay, you go look it up and see. Now, according to Rashi, what? I don't remember. According to Rashi, the next two parshiot fit in with this theme that we don't want this person to do it. The next two parshiot deal with firstborn son and the ben sora umorah. What's the halacha of the firstborn son? Firstborn son is given a double portion. And the pasuk says, even if he is a ben snu'ah, the son of a despised wife. And Rashi says, like an eshet yifat torah. Like after a while, you realize, why did I marry her? What was I thinking? But she actually gave you your first child. He gets a double portion, even though you have a beloved wife who gave you a child, but it wasn't your firstborn. You must give your double portion to the firstborn. So Rashi says this fits in again because she. Why would you hate a woman? Because she's an eshet yifat torah that your desires are getting the best of you, and only afterwards you realize, wow, that was a mistake. Yes, what do you want to say?
Why did David gave the kingship to Shlomo, not to Amnon?
This kingship, we're talking about Bechor, double portion.
Is that the same?
No. But you could ask me a different question. There is a story in Chumash that is exactly like this. And that is Yaakov Avinu. Who's his firstborn?
Reuven.
She is from the Isha HaSnu'ah. It actually says in the Pasuk, she is referred to as Snu'ah. Why? In relationship to Rachel, who is the Ahuva. Who gets the double portion? Yosef, the firstborn of the Ahuva. Absolutely against Well, we have
the double portion, like land-wise.
The double portion in that Ephraim and Manasseh are given, like, they're like status of a Shevet. They also get a double portion. Ephraim and Manasseh get a double portion of the land. Yosef gets a double portion. The double portion goes to Yosef, not to Reuven. He loses his firstborn rights to Yosef. So the Sforno says this halacha is as long as the firstborn did not do anything to disqualify himself. But when Reuven slept with Bilha, he disqualified himself from being the firstborn. And then the father is able to rule, I don't want to give you, you're not qualified. And therefore the Sforno, you know, points this out. Sounds like it's against the halacha. And obviously the halacha was written after. And one could say, maybe God wrote this halacha after seeing all the sibling rivalry, and you know, and but the Sforno's idea is no, Reuven was disqualified. Yes, and based on Sforno, so it can be done again. Yeah.
Can you sell it before like Esau did?
He was selling his spiritual part, not the physical part.
Who says until he didn't? Who is the commentator say until he didn't do anything wrong?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm just saying, when I read this parasha, it sounds very strange. And I looked around to see if anyone talked about it, and I saw the Sforno did. Now, he's the one that says he disqualified himself through what he did with Bilha. What would everyone else say? I'm assuming maybe their argument would be, okay, it was before Matan Torah, and maybe what Yaakov did was wrong. Maybe the Torah is writing exactly in that language, talking about the Isha Snua versus the Isha Ahuva. It's exactly the way Leah and Rachel are written, to say, don't do that. Okay, but I didn't find someone say that. I'm not saying there aren't people out there that did say it. I just didn't see it. But the Sforno does at least address this, and he says it in this way, that he disqualified himself. Yeah.
What did disqualify the Reuven? The fact he moved the bed?
Well, that's Rashi's interpretation, but according to other Mepharshim, he actually slept with her.
Oh.
Okay. Now, what about the next parasha, Ben Sora Mora? Ben Sora Mora is the rebellious son who is killed before he becomes even worse. Now, what is exactly the case? He is Zolel V'Sovei. He drinks wine. He eats meat. And he does this between the age of 13 and 13 and 3 months, and we kill him. Now again, according to Rashi, why do you go up to Derech? Oh, because he's the son of an Eshet Yifat Tawar. Rashi blaming it all, one parasha after the other, saying one leads to the other. He, look at the terrible DNA he had. He had this non-Jewish woman, maybe this friction in the house. He's rebelling against his father because his father views his mother as an Isha Snua. She doesn't want to give him the double portion. He goes off the Derech. Rashi's having everything run together. And now he's going off the Derech. And therefore we kill him before he becomes a total Rasha. Let him die at Tzaddik before he does something worse. The Ramban says the two sins that we have here are, one, rebelling against the parents. It says he steals money from his parents to go and feed his addiction. And two, gluttony and drunkenness. And, says the Gemara, you're only Ben Sora Mora if the food was kosher, if the wine was kosher. In other words, the sin isn't, oh, look, you're eating non-kosher food. His iser is, he's violating kedoshim to you. Be a good moral person. And when you eat like a pig, and, you know, get yourself drunk, you are naval b'reshut ha-Torah. You're despicable, disgusting, even if you're keeping the letter of the law. That's all part of the Ramban's ideas that we have in Parsha Kedoshim. And we kill him now before things get worse. Yes?
I thought I learned this last year, Ben Sora Mora, and we learned that at the end. We just learned this for the sake of learning.
So then there's a machlokas. Is there such a thing? Did it ever happen historically? A Ben Sora Mora. So one person says, yes, I was at a kever, I was at the grave of Ben Sora Mora. There's another person says, no, there was never such a thing. If you look at the Gemara, the laws in order to get a Ben Sora Mora are extremely strange. Aside from the fact that between 13 and 3 months, the parents have to be the same height, have to have the same voice. So they speak the same language, that means they have the same voice. Like, there's a whole bunch of things that seem very, very strange for this to happen.
And the parents,
it says exactly what type of meat and type of wine, like, to the point that you can understand. So now the question is, so why teach it? If it could hardly ever happen, why teach it? And it also seems like he had a first, if it even happens once, first we give him Malchus. Then it would have to happen a second time. And if one of the parents disagrees, it would never happen. So, like, there's so many technicalities.
How do you mean you didn't want him ever? It's like,
what?
What does it mean? Like,
did you steal money to go buy a big glutton and were you warned where your parents lay?
If you were, your parents missed out on a golden opportunity. Anyway, I'm sorry. Nothing. Moving on. It's okay. You can listen to the recording. Now, if it never happened, what's the lesson? So you could say, lesson number one, sometimes you need to exhibit tough love. If you don't, you'll regret it. Sometimes parents are very soft on their children, and sometimes a kid needs discipline. Certainly if he's acting in a really, really unbecoming way, to just ignore it is not the move. So as I was saying, sometimes you have to be really, really tough. Certainly going to the Gemara, first give him Malchus before you actually kill him. So that would be, you know, is tough love and killing. So like the tough love is Malchus first. But there's one idea. Second idea could also be, Rabbeinu Chaya says, teaching you, so it's a very difficult lesson, but love of God is more important than love of your child. And if God says right now, this child did all these things, he's deserving of death, bring your child in to be killed. Again, how often would you find both a father and a mother would agree to do this? I don't know. But Rabbeinu Chaya brings an example. Okay, it's Yitzhak. Avram's willing to kill Yitzhak. Okay, we don't know that Sarah would have been on board. Right, we're never told about that. Right, but Avram was willing to do it. So Rabbeinu Bachai says this is a lesson that we are being taught. Love of God over love of children. Okay, difficult lesson. We then start talking about even after you do skila, which we mentioned over here, we then hang the person. Okay, hanging is not the way that we kill people. After we kill people in Beis Din, person is hanged in order for people to learn, people to see, okay? And hopefully never do such a thing. Why? What happened to that guy? Oh, he was that. Okay. And that's the whole idea. What? We do. So exactly. We do. But what do? We have to take them down by Shkia. Because every human being is created with Tzelem and Elokim. It's disgraceful. So the minhag was, whenever you did hang somebody, you did it close before Shkia. She wasn't up for a long time. He or she. And then you would take the person down before Shkia. Okay. We then moved into, we've been learning this year.
We hang the rebellious...
After Shkila. Not just him, anyone that's killed by Beis Din. Then we do Hashavas Aveda. The parashas are talking about Hashavas Aveda. This is important for society to function. We talk about Te'ina and Prika, loading up an animal, unloading an animal. We care about people. Said Lubavitcher Rebbe, I have to worry about someone's animal who fell. Kal v'chomer, I have to help someone who himself has spiritually fallen. I have to help him up. Okay? This is this idea. What? Person doesn't want to help you, offer. Don't force somebody to grab that little lady. I'm crossing you across the street, but I don't want to go across the street. No, we don't do like that. Okay? It's not about you. It's about the person. You offer. Okay?
And if they deny, we just...
If they don't want, you know, that's their prerogative. I'm just saying, like, there are sometimes proud people. I once was told by a rabbi who was a rabbi in a well-to-do community. And he said, everyone in my community, or many people in my community, they were always the givers when it came to tzedakah. And then, like, a recession hit, and many people needed to receive. It was very hard for them to receive. Right? So it could be someone's proud. He doesn't want help. Okay? That's something else. But here we're talking about the animal. So then, that's just the way you try to do it. The animal, it's also about Tsar Balei Chaim. Tsar Balei Chaim, so I'm supposed to try to help the animal. It's just helping someone unload their car. It's not Tsar Balei Chaim to his Chevy. You know, but it's an animal, so Tsar Balei Chaim, so you try to help out. Okay. Then we get into, today maybe not politically correct, but the Torah says, a man may not wear women's clothing, a woman may not wear men's clothing. This is considered a tleiva, an abomination. I'm not going to go further. Moving on. What? No, if people do it, so then it switches. Could be the first trailblazers, when men started to wear whatever jewelry they wore. So maybe if at the time that was considered beged isha, but if it became widespread, it's not considered begadisha anymore. Today, if you're going to Scotland, then everyone's walking around in a kilt. So that's not begadisha in Scotland. But if you walk around that way in New Jersey, it is. Right? So it sort of just, you know, depends where you are. What?
Why can't women wear pants?
So if it's women's pants and many women wear pants, they may absolutely wear pants. That's not a problem with begadisha. That'll be a separate issue. Is it considered, you know, tznius issues? That's something else. That's not there. That's a separate issue. But as far as begadisha, if women walk around in pants, it's not begadisha anymore. Right? Wouldn't it be begadisha for women to wear pants? Okay.
And men to get their earrings?
And earrings also. I would say today, I don't know how widespread yet is, but if it's considered sufficiently widespread, so it wouldn't be begged ish for a man to wear an earring. At a certain point, it probably won't be. Right now, is it okay for a man to wear a ring? Yeah. So many men wear rings. Certainly, it's okay for men to wear watches. But you should know, like 150 years ago, they were saying maybe a man can't wear a watch on Shabbos because he'd take it off because it's... Because for men, it's only functional. It's not jewelry. But now, if men wear jewelry, they would wear a watch. Even if it's not, you know, all sorts of questions come up. If men wear jewelry, so if an earring becomes the norm for at least some men, you know, I'm saying everyone has to do it, but it becomes like a normal thing, and maybe we're there. I'm not a post-sick. I have no idea how much we consider it to be, you know, oh, enough people are doing it. I don't know. But I would say, I don't think I have a problem with anyone wearing rings or a watch or something like that. Okay? Or even like we have students here that walk around with like necklaces with a chai on it or like a Magen David. I think enough men wear necklaces that it's not considered begad isha. Maybe we're at that point by earrings. I don't know. Yeah, Tia.
If we wear it like some women's clothes just
like for Purim.
For first,
yeah, so it could be, that's a machlokas. There are some Rishonim that say, yeah, you can get dressed up like a woman on Purim, and others were absolutely opposed. Okay? You have different opinions.
Because one time for theater, I played the role of a
oh, and like a right. So yeah. So I'm saying there would be people that say it's okay, and other people saying it's not okay. Different opinions that I've come across. Okay, moving on. Shiluach HaKein. Shiluach HaKein, one of the two mitzvahs that it says in the Torah, you have a lengthening of days, and that is sending away the mother bird before you take the eggs or the chicks. The Ramban says, even though, as we saw in Gemara Megillah, that we shouldn't say, oh, God did this because he has rachamim, the Ramban says, it is done, though, to instill rachamim in us. We are supposed to learn to have rachamim. And there's actually machlokas, if you have no need for the chicks or the eggs, should you do shiluach hakein? Some say yes, others say no. Okay? To me, you know, not that I'm a posek, but I lean more to the side, the Ran, the Gemara there, and the Chassam Sofer that say, if you don't need the eggs, why in the world would I do it? Okay, I don't want to cause, you know, discomfort and pain to the mother just because I want to get a mitzvah. Others will argue, well, you're eating meat, you know, you're shechting meat, you know, so you're really worried about the pain to the animal there when you're eating meat. So they have a good point on me on that.
No,
okay?
That's true. They're the same thing, because when you shave the animal, I don't know, I'm not a shochet, but you're supposed not to notice it.
No, okay, fine.
But when you send away your mother, the mother, she's...
I know. I'm saying, I personally, you know, look for ways around it. Okay, like there was a nest that was made in my kid's window between like the saragim, like the bars and the window. And I asked her, I said, I don't want to do it. I said, you don't have to because it's... in like a, it's not in a public place, it's in a private, well, whatever, like, I didn't want to do it. Okay?
Why, what did you want?
I just take the egg and put it back.
No, you send away the mother.
Yeah, they send away the mother, take the egg, and then
okay,
the
I read that. I read that there are sometimes the mother won't go back and sit on the egg.
Yeah, because the mother smells. She smells the eggs, and she considers them as not belongs to her.
Right.
To her.
So then...
so they will die.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So to me, I just find it cruel. Okay? I'm just saying, it's my own opinion. If I didn't have anyone to base it on, so it's not for me, but the Ran says that, Rishon and the Gemara, and the Chassam Sofer, one of the biggest poskim, says it. So, I'm not saying that that's what everyone says. Most people don't say it. That's my view. Got to move on. Okay. Luckily, Sal's not here to point to the clock. Okay. Ma'akeh. Okay. Ma'akeh. We have to set up They had flat roofs. Sometimes there's some place in Jerusalem as well. You have flat roofs. They used to like dry fruits on the roof. So since the roof was in use, you had a sukkah there, you dry stuff there, you had to make sure that you built sort of a guardrail, a maquet, a fence around it so that people are up there don't fall down. And anyone has merpeset in Israel has to put up a maquet. And even if you don't have a merpeset, if you have a swimming pool, you have the same idea. If you have a ditch, someone might fall in. So you have to put up some sort of barrier that people don't fall and get injured. That's on you. You have something on your property, you have to make sure that people don't fall from it. The Gemara then goes, the Parsha is talking about kelayim. Kelayim comes in all shapes and sizes. There's kelayim in a vineyard. If I have, it's like mixing of things. If I have a vineyard and I have grapes growing above vegetation that's underneath. I'm the ground, let's say wheat growing, and above it I put like a cord and I have vines above it. That's called kilaya karam. If I plow an ox and a donkey or any other two animals together, that's also called kilayim. If I mix wool and linen, what's that called? Chatnez. That's a form of kilayim. And then right after tzitzis is written. Why is tzitzis written? Says the Gemara to teach me I can do kilayim, I can do chatnez by tzitzis. I could have wool strings and a linen garment. That is permissible. Mitzat ase docha lotase. That's what I learned from the juxtaposition of those two parshiyot.
I can do the vine and the wheat.
It's part of kilayim. Not just like mixing two seeds and creating my own type of fruit, but even this is considered. Now let it do it. Can't even have them growing too closely one next to another. It's all kilayim. It's all mesechta in Zrayim called kilayim.
On my
porch. What?
If I grow, let's say, grapes, a vineyard on my porch, right, that's overlooking my field of...
It depends how far above. Now, we then move into the next group of halachot, and they deal with not driving the Shekhinah away. So first of all, we talk about Motzi Shemra. Motzi Shemra, today, we refer to it as slander. But the classic case is a pasuk where a new husband comes into Beis Din and says, my wife was not a virgin. Okay, those of you who will be here next year, that's the Masech that we're learning, Masech Ksuvis, it starts off with that. My wife is not a virgin. And then, the halacha is, if you were lying in court, so you have to pay a knas, a fine, 100 silver coins, whatever that was worth, right? It's a lot more than whatever, it's like 100 shekel today. But you pay 100 silver coins, and you get malchus, you get whipped, and you cannot divorce her, unless she wants out. Right, you have to take care of her the rest of your life.
She
really was, and you were just bad mouthing her.
What was the group you said of mitzvot?
These are like driving the Shekhinah away from Am Yisrael. If she, on the other hand, did cheat on you while you were engaged, so then she's chayav skila. Okay,
if she was married.
What? So right, it's between engagement. The engagement in the time of the Gemara was a real engagement. Like us, we're just like, oh, we're going to get married. You gave her the rings, Arei Mekudesh Ali. You're engaged now. No one else can sleep with her. Okay, till you got married, usually it was a year later. Okay?
What did she sleep around before you were engaged?
This is before, it's not our issue. We're talking about when you were engaged. Now,
and we killed the girl if she's...
Yes. If she slept, she cheated on you during this engagement period, like the husband claims, she gets killed with skila, which is the most severe of the punishments. If your married wife cheats on you, she also gets killed, but only chenek. That's an interesting thing. Okay, this engagement period, you're longing to be with your wife, and this love and this attraction and this desire, and then she cheats on you. It's like the worst betrayal. Seemingly that way from the punishment. It's worse than if you're already married. I don't know. That's what the Torah says. Skila versus chenek. Anyway, if a man rapes her, the woman gets no punishment. Okay, woman gets no punishment. What is the halacha for the man? Anyone know? Okay, so again, we're talking about now just a single woman. Single woman gets raped. So if he rapes a basula, a virgin, so first thing is he pays a knas. He has to pay 50 silver coins to the father. And then if the father, let's say he's a minor, or the girl's already an adult, she desires to marry him, So then he has to marry her, and once again, can never divorce her. The idea is, your actions have consequences. You do think, you say, oh, I'm going to do this one-time thing. It's not up to you. Too bad. She never raped her. You raped her. So she doesn't want, she just gets the 50 silver coins. But the idea could be, if a woman is extremely poor, her prospects of being supported by someone that can financially take care of her, very slim. And now some very wealthy person rapes her. That might be her ticket out of, you know, a life of poverty. And she / her father might say, you know what? He'd not make a good first impression. I'll give you that. But he will be able to support you, you know, and take care of you the rest of your life.
Can she marry him?
Take his money and leave?
Leave it with him and divorce and take the part of the money.
Okay, she'll get whatever's in the ksuba, but not more than that. So the ksuba will have 200 zuz, whatever it is, you know, like 100 zuz, because she's not a virgin. But she's not going to necessarily get more than that. The whole idea that he gets 50 silver coins, like, is half the ksuba. The father who's now marrying his daughter, if he married his daughter, she'll get 200 zuz in the ksuba. If she was not a ksuba, she'll get only 100. Now she's not a ksuba. So the father is being compensated, you know, father / daughter is being compensated because her value went down.
So dumb.
Okay, I'm glad you're calling the Torah dumb. That's good. That's good. But this is what I'm what you said. These are the halachot. Now, you're asking, would a woman who gets raped want to marry the guy? In our modern day, we would assume absolutely not. Okay, but I'm just saying it's possible in that time, depending on your financial situation, this might be your ticket out, and it might be worth your while. Okay. No one's telling her she has to do it. If she agrees,
that would be it. In China, they have this.
No. How do I kill someone in revenge?
In North Korea, some North Korean women that escape from North Korea, they escape to China, but the only ticket away is that they have to be like sex slave.
Yes, terrible.
Guys. And then after they can escape.
Yes, and it's not just North Korea and China. I think it happens in a lot of countries.
It's awful, but sometimes it's the only way.
I know, it's terrible. Now, it's interesting though. Motzi Shemra, what was the knas? 100. Rape? 50. Why? It's a very interesting idea that you find in the Mor Nebuchim. Okay? Who wrote the Mor Nebuchim? The Rambam. Okay? Both the rapist and the Motzi Shemra tried to have free sex. They tried to have relations and then say, all right, I'm out of here. Now, and they're given a knas. But what's the difference? One did it secretly and one did it publicly. The rapist does it publicly. The one who's the most ashamed is trying to hide behind, after he just slept with her, he said, oh, but she wasn't a virgin. I want to get rid of her and not pay any of the knas because it was fraud. So basically, he slept with a woman and wanted to get out of it by not doing anything. The rapist, it was a little bit more vulgar, but it was out in the open. What's the difference between a ganef and a goslin?
Oh, well, when they say hiding.
Good. And who has to pay kefel? Who has to pay double? The ganef. The goslin just gives back the what was stolen. Kind of pays double. Says the Mor Nebuchim, so too over here. Same idea. Just like the ganef tries to do this whole thing secretly, we say, aha, can we get away with that? Fine, you double. So too, the Motzi Shemra guy tried to get away with it. Everyone thinks he's a tzaddik. No one thinks he's a terrible person. They just, oh, we feel so sorry for you that they lied to you, right? And he thought he'd get away with it. We fine him double. Okay? Interesting idea with the Rambam. Yes.
Rambam, right?
Rambam, Mor Nebuchim.
Great idea.
Now, then it starts listing all the people a Jew may not marry, excluding converts. Converts were not as machmir on, but a Jewish woman cannot marry a man who has crushed testicles. Okay, if, however, he's born that way, if through illnesses, okay, we're talking about someone who, you know, has testicles crushed, cannot marry a regular Jewish woman. Okay, he cannot marry a woman cannot marry a Moabite or Ammoni man. Now, even though due to Lot and Lot being an escort to Avram and Sarah, we're not allowed to fight against them, says the Pesukim, because Lot was with you, can't fight against them. Since they were not hospitable to Bnei Yisrael, which are only the Midbar, We don't want to marry into that community. We want to marry people who are hospitable. That only applies to the men, because they were the ones who decided if they'd be hospitable. Women were not the ones who were making that decision. Therefore, Rus was able to marry into the Jewish people. We then talk about people from Edom and Egypt. Edom and Egypt, you can only marry a third generation convert. Who can marry a regular Edomi convert? Another convert. Okay? Convert can marry a Edomi or Mitzri convert. A son of an Edomi or Mitzri convert can only marry a convert. But once you get to the grandchild, can marry a regular Jewish person. Okay? Why are they less severe than Moab and Ammon? I mean, Egypt. Think about it. Egypt, they enslaved us. So, the idea is as follows. While Egypt and Edom were mean, Edom was like Esav, they were mean to us, they had at least a bit of a reason. Okay, Egypt, on the one hand, they were hospitable. They took us in, they gave us lodging, till we ended up becoming slaves some generations later. And even then, it was because Paro had a fear that we would become like a fifth column and turn on them. There is at least a rationale. And Edom as well, Esav, you know, felt wronged by Yaakov taking his Bechora, being tricked, and therefore they had at least a little bit of a reason to hate us. Ammon and Moab, I mean, they should have had gratitude, since their forefather was Lot, and Abram took care of Lot. So therefore, they are judged more harshly than it's Egypt and Edom. Okay, we're then told that we have to keep our army camp holy. The Ramban says battles lead to stress. Stress leads to violence and antisocial behavior. And we have to be vigilant against this. Even things such as, and it says in Pesukim, if you have to relieve yourself, do not do it where everyone is sleeping. Go outside of the camp. It says you should have a little shovel with you. Dig a hole, relieve yourself, and cover it up. You might sit there and say, all day I see guts and blood and limbs. I'm fighting. So what? I see some excrement. Yes, right now you can take care of it. Do it. Right? We're not animals. We don't just leave stuff all over the place. And we have to, you know, try to be as moral and human as possible. It also says, if you become a Balkari while you're in the camp, you must leave the camp. The camp of the soldiers is a holy place, and you have to leave the Machane Shechina and Leviah. If you're in your own camp, you have to leave until you go to the mikvah. Okay, if you're Machane Yisrael, that's fine. But the Machane, not the army camp, the Machane Shechina can't go into the Beit HaMikdash. Machane Leviah, right around that, in modern terminology, that would be, let's say, the Harabayit. Couldn't go up there if you're a Balkari. You have to go to the mikvah first. Also, we talk about the Isser of a Kadesh and a Kadesha. These were male and female prostitutes. Okay? People that just slept around. They were Mufkarim Liznus. Also, it talks about a prostitute cannot bring her paycheck and use it to buy Krabanos. Okay? Esnan Zona. And Mechir Kelet, if I sold the dog, let's say I switched the dog for a sheep, can't bring that sheep. It's considered disgusting. A dog is considered like a heifer animal. I can't do it. And Esnan Zona, if a woman got paid, she was a zona, she got paid, let's say, in a sheep. Okay, can't bring that as a karban. That would be Aser. Okay, now also, aside from the fact that it's heifer, probably it's also because she might think it's like a kapara. Oh, I did this, but now I'm bringing staka. Right? Based on this, it would seem maybe it's a little bit problematic for people who gain their money in illegal ways to now take that money and donate it to yeshivas and shuls, right? You know, this is like money that was gained through illegal means, probably let the person think, oh, I'm doing kapara now. I'm taking my insider training money and turning it into a base medrash. Yeah.
They just say that the reason why some children like go off the dere or something is because the parents feed them with non-kosher money.
Maybe. I never heard that. That would be a mystical thing, which is totally not my field. I don't know. Yes.
Is that where people say you can't get more festival like doesn't give Shabbat?
I don't know. I'm here it's talking about something like more immoral. I don't know. I think that many places take from Jews that are not Shomer Shabbat, but I think it's a bigger question. If you know a guy was arrested, okay, you know for a fact he did crimes, illegal crimes, old crimes are illegal, but you got to, like, now he's gonna, you want to honor him, he's gonna give money. There are tshuvas written about it. I know Ravadios got a tshuva on it. I don't remember what he paskin, but there are questions about this. Okay. Now the mitzvah is talking about bringing Shechina into the machane. We have to act better than the average person. Interest. Okay? A lot of guys upstairs in the basement are learning the Perek and Bava Metzia deals with interest. So even though it's totally okay to charge interest to a non-Jew, same way I could charge someone to use my car, could charge someone to use my money, for a Jew you can't. Because he's like your brother. You wouldn't charge your brother to borrow your car. You can't charge your brother. Every Jew is your brother. It talks about nidarim. I have to be careful to keep my word. I make a nether. Your word is your bond. We talk about workers. When you have someone working in the field, he is allowed to eat while working. Later on, we're going to see the same idea with animals. They cannot be muzzled while they're working. First, not just because you should have compassion. They're working, you should eat a little bit. But also, if he's strong, he's going to be a better worker. Right? If he's sitting there not eating, he's going to be a worse worker. So based on that, the halacha is you're allowed to work, eat while you're working. But I can't take stuff to bring home. Right, I'm allowed to give myself the energy to work. So great, while I'm working, I'm picking the fruits. I can eat some fruits. But they just put away from me to eat later. That's not okay. We then have the laws of Kiddushin and Gerushin. They're found in our parasha, Parasha Ki Tetzeh. By Kiddushin, it says, that first year that you're married, Naki Lebeta. That first year, you don't go to the army. You're not allowed to even travel away on business unless your wife gives you permission. You have to be with your wife. Okay? You have to misameach ishto. You have to make her happy. Now, if, however, you find something in your wife that you find appalling and you want to divorce her, you may. The pasuk says, "Ve'im lo timsachein be'inam." She doesn't find favor in your eyes. Ki matza ba ervas tavar. You find in her ervas tavar. I'm not going to translate that yet. Yikatev sefer kritut. You have to write her a get. So what is this matzah ba'erbas davar? Three-way machlokas at the end of Masech Gittin. According to Beit Shammai, erva all over Shas means what? Forbidden relations. So if your wife cheated on you, then you could divorce her. If she didn't, you may not. Very simple. The only grounds for divorce, according to Beit Shammai, is your wife cheated on you. According to Beit Hillel, way more lenient. Any thing that upsets you. Okay? Your wife burnt dinner. I can't believe you burnt dinner. Okay? You can divorce her. Rabbi Akiva, goes one step further. Your wife was perfect. She never did anything wrong. But you now find someone else more attractive. You just want to marry someone else. So, you can divorce your wife and marry someone else.
She allowed to divorce you?
No.
What if she's abusive?
I mean, she could ask you for a divorce, but in the end, divorce is in the hands of the man. Hopefully, if a man is a moral person, he doesn't want to keep his wife hostage. If he knows his wife doesn't love him, and says, I don't want to be with you, hopefully, the average normal person will not keep his wife a prisoner, and he will divorce her. Does that always happen? Unfortunately, no. Okay? But according to Rabbi Akiva, you can just decide, I want to get rid of her. Now, Rav Soloveitchik explained, this is the beginning of adultery. If in your heart you are ready, your heart and mind, you're thinking about someone else, so then that's already the end of your marriage. If you feel that you can have companionship with someone else and not your wife, that's already the beginning of the end, and we can just, you know, end the marriage then. That would be explaining Shitas Rabbi Akiva. All right, there's more stuff, but we'll stop over here because we're way past time. But we should keep going.
Yeah.
Okay, people are going to keep coming in. So we'll have to stop over here. Yeah, this is a room. Okay, do you know how to stop it?
Oh, I don't have to stop it.